This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The negative perception that has come with sanctions has impacted on foreign direct investment inflows. This in turn negatively affects our economic growth.
That's Kenyan official John Mukundi on why some farmers are switching to a stimulant herb instead of traditional crops. Details coming up also. Guinea-Bissau's prime minister refuses to step down after being fired by the president. Meanwhile, newly elected Tunisian prime minister wasted no time making changes by firing the foreign and defense ministers. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Guinea-Bissau's prime minister has refused to step down after the president fired him and the rest of the cabinet as part of a contentious dispute that the regional group ECOWAS has been trying to mediate. The conflict is playing out as the country prepares for elections on November 24th, while trying to avoid the periodic instability that has plagued it since independence in 1974. President José Mário Vaz, who is seeking re-election, dissolved the government by presidential decree on Monday, saying political chaos was undermining the government's functionality. But Prime Minister Aristide Gomes countered that Vaz was creating total disorder and the 15-nation Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, called the decree illegal and warned it might impose sanctions. Today, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged all political stakeholders to abide by the decisions taken by ECOWAS regarding the governance arrangement until the election. New Tunisian Prime Minister Kais Saied, who was elected on a wave of voter disillusionment, has wasted no time making changes, firing the foreign and defense ministers. The former professor and political newcomer scored a landslide victory 2 weeks ago as the populace rejected the existing political leaders. A statement from the government presidency yesterday said Prime Minister Yusuf Kahid, who will keep his job until a new coalition government is in place, dismissed Foreign Minister Kamias Jinnawi and Defense Minister Abdelkarim Zibidi after consulting with Saied. Economic Diplomacy Minister Hatem Farjani was also fired. Intense, complicated negotiations are underway to form a new government. Moderate Islamist party Ennahda emerged as the winner of recent parliamentary elections, but with only 52 of the 217 seats. Tutoring has long been a way for underperforming students to get a boost. Now it's become a lifeline for Zimbabwe's teachers, whose salaries are constantly losing ground to rising prices due to runaway inflation. Reporter Kuzai Zanawash has more details.
Opet Masaraure is a teachers' union leader. He paints a bleak picture of how teachers struggle to survive on their meagre income.
If an average teacher getting 900 local Zimbabwean currents at the RITGS, which means this is only enough maybe to buy some loaves of bread. If you choose maybe to buy 2 loaves of bread per day, I think you can exhaust that in 30 days. That is, at the end of the day, you find teachers finding extra work elsewhere to supplement their teaching responsibilities.
He adds that teachers cannot afford health care, food, rent or education for their own children. As a result, they have to be resourceful to survive.
Because of the status quo, we've seen teachers going out of their way to teach learners out of the normal working hours. For example, when they knock off at around 4 p.m., they engage another class where they're also trying to eke out a living.
Masaraure says prices vary between $5 to $10 per month. He says This is more prominent in urban areas, where family income levels are better than those in rural areas, who often struggle to feed their families. He adds that the idea behind extra lessons is meant to help students who are lagging behind on their studies. As expected, mathematics, English, and science subjects often attract more students than other subjects. As the country's economy continues to decline, there have been growing calls by civil servants for industrial actions that will pressure government to realign their incomes with the cost of living. Government doctors have been staying home for the past 2 months, saying they can't afford to go to work. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, is condemning the killing of three of its aid workers on Sunday during fighting between government forces and National Salvation Front rebels in Yer River State's Morobo County. IOM says it is suspending Ebola screening activities at various locations near the South Sudan DRC border because it is too dangerous to continue operations in those areas. La Suba Memo reports for Njuba.
IOM communications officer in Njuba, Leatile Putwa, says the volunteer aid workers, one female and two males, who were all natives of Morobo County, were caught in crossfire between government forces and NAS rebels in the remote village of Isebi.
So deeply saddened by the loss of our staff members, and you know we reiterate that innocent civilians and humanitarian workers should not be a target of such senseless acts of violence.
Putwa says IOM does not have a clear readout on what the aid workers were doing when they got caught up in the fighting that erupted over the weekend. In a press statement released today, IOM says two other male volunteers suffered non-life-threatening injuries and that one of the injured is recovering from a gunshot wound. The statement also says a female volunteer and the son of a murdered female aid worker were abducted in the attack. Their whereabouts are unknown. Emi Antinoja runs the communications office in Juba for the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs.
OCHA, like the humanitarian coordinator, strongly condemns the violence against humanitarian workers and demands that those responsible for this act be brought to justice.
Yesterday, the National Salvation Front issued a statement in which it accused the South Sudan People's Defense Force, or SSPDF, of attacking rebel positions in Morobo County on October 27th and 28th, saying NAS forces fought back in self-defense. When asked about the aid workers who were killed Sunday, NASA spokesperson Suba Samuel wondered how it could be that IOM aid workers were among 17 government forces that he claims NASA killed during the fighting.
I don't know how IOM personnel happened to be involved in that, but what we know, the attack, our base was attacked and we pursued the SSPDF soldiers were purely a military operation. If they are civilians, then that might be the wives of those soldiers that are out.
SSPDF spokesperson Major General Lulrai Kong confirmed that clashes occurred in Morobo County on Sunday, but accused NAS rebels of attacking government forces' positions in Isebi. Asked why aid workers were killed in the attack, Kong said he was not aware of any deaths of IOM employees.
The report I received did not indicate that we had personnel from that organization. We had just referred to that we were also killed along with our servicemen. There was no indication. You could find out from a civil authority, but the area that was attacked was purely ours. So I'm not aware of that. Maybe they were attacked in a separate incident.
Kong confirmed one woman and a child have gone missing following the clashes in Morobo. Putwa says IOM has suspended its Ebola awareness and monitoring activities along the South Sudan Democratic Republic of Congo border following the recent violence.
Right now, the measures that we have taken after this incident is that we have suspended operations in five locations where we're operating point of entry sites. These are in Isebi, Bazi, Kirikwa, Lasu, and Okap. Until we can guarantee the safety and security of our personnel operating in this area, we will continue to suspend the operations.
This marks the first killing of eight workers in South Sudan since 2018, according to UN OCHA. A total of 115 aid workers have been killed in South Sudan since the outbreak of violence in December 2013. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Some Rwandans who used to be wildlife poachers have turned into conservationists. Reporter Eugene Uimana has more from the Gorilla Guardians village located near Volcanoes National Park in northern Rwanda.
Felicie Kabatsi sings about the importance of gorilla conservation. You wouldn't know from his lyrics that he used to hunt gorillas and other wild animals in Volcano National Park. He was a poacher for 30 years and served 4 months in jail for it. Then one day, a buffalo killed his brother. He says they were hunting together. Arriving in the forest, his brother and his other friends took another way, and unfortunately, a buffalo killed his brother right away. After talking with animal conservationists, Kawatsi had a change of heart and joined their side. He now makes a living at Gorilla Guardians Village, where he plays traditional musical instruments for tourists. His story is similar to those of other members of this cooperative, like Mukano Helvenansi. She used to go poaching with her husband. She says, "My husband used to carry spears, me a machete, with a bag to put in the meat of animals that we killed. But with the training and this project, they have changed their mindset." Now she refers to poaching as a serious crime and works in the village making traditional baskets for tourists. Visitors go to the park, like South African tourist Nelis Walmarans, go on hikes to see the gorillas, but their money supports projects that aim to both employ Gwandans and promote conservation.
What they've done here, what they've created here is an employment and opportunity for a lot of people that would have previously used the forest for livelihood. And in turn, let's say, subsistence living.
Government figures show conservation efforts is boosting tourism revenue. This is Gwandan President Paul Kagame.
The support of the local communities, whom I have had the opportunity to express our thanks to, and also made sure that they benefit from this good cooperation.
In a bid to boost conservation and make Gwandans feel more connected to wildlife, Gwanda also began an annual gorilla naming ceremony in 2015. At this year's event, 25 baby mountain gorillas were named, bringing to the total number to 281. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Musanze, Northern Gwanda.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 19 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Guinea-Bissau's Prime Minister refuses to step down after being fired by the President. Meanwhile, newly elected Tunisian Prime Minister wasted no time making changes by firing the foreign and defense ministers. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Vultures in Nigeria are under serious threat The birds are used in spiritual rituals, which include communicating with the dead. Conservationists are engaging with local communities to save the birds. Chika Adua reports from the city of Enugu.
Across Nigeria, there's a rising demand for vultures, and poachers are driving the local population of four large vulture species to near extinction. The Nigerian Conservation Foundation is now placing vulture preservation high on its agenda. Abidemi Balogun, a senior special conservation officer with the foundation's educational unit, is engaging with local communities where superstitions and folklore about the bird exists.
Someone actually asked me that how do they identify the evil one, because there's been a belief that vultures are evil birds.
Balogun told VOA that the birds aren't being hunted for consumption as much as they're being killed for spiritual practices.
Some of the findings that we made was that the head is used in for ritual purposes, and the head is the most expensive part of it.
In local markets, vulture feathers are sold for about 100 naira. That's under 50 cents. But the head can fetch up to 25,000 naira, or about $70. In Nigeria's diverse cultural landscape, the beliefs around vultures vary widely. In the southwest, where they're called igu, vultures are seen as sacred in traditional spirituality. According to folklore, they can be used to communicate with the dead or to appease the gods in elaborate sacrificial ceremonies. In northern Nigeria, they are consumed, but they're also sold by traders known as Yanchinfida to be used in traditional medicine and spiritual healing. Some say the head possesses clairvoyant powers. In southeastern Nigeria, the bird is not eaten and has no place in traditional spirituality. Ike Nwakama from the Nigerian Supreme Council of Traditional Worship told VOA. He said it is viewed as unclean, therefore unacceptable to traditional gods. People don't want them around, whether alive or dead. That's why an incident that happened in July caused widespread panic at a local market. Amateur video captured shocked and fearful reactions at the sight of 50 dead vultures on the ground at a market in the southeastern state of Enugu. Igwe Godwin Eko, the traditional ruler of that community, told VOA that a poacher killed the vultures en masse to sell the corpses.
We bring out some pieces of meat and poison it and throw to the vultures.
Vulture trafficking has become a lucrative trade. The Conservation Foundation says 500 tons of vultures are trafficked every month. In Enugu last week, Igwe Eko attended a forum that was organized by the Conservation Foundation. The foundation held workshops in four cities across Nigeria. Attendance at the Enugu edition went to a popular market to talk to meat butchers and ask them to inform authorities if they ever spot vulture parts being sold. BirdLife International says across Africa, vulture populations have virtually collapsed in the last 30 years, with poisoning as the major threat. The Global Partnership Organization describes vultures as nature's sanitary workers, worthy of being celebrated. Chika Odua for VOA News, Enugu, Nigeria.
Kenya's reputation as a producer of world-class marathon runners was further boosted this month when Kenyans Eliud Kipchego and Bridget Kosgei broke world records on the same weekend. Running is a big thing for the East African nation, where regular competitions give young runners a chance to prepare for greater glory. Mohamed Yusuf has more from Ndalat, Kenya.
RDJ, silence for the start. Wameanza.
Kenya's Ndalat cross-country races, a yearly event in the Rift Valley, attracts more than 5,000 runners of all ages. This year's contest comes just a week after Kenyan marathon runners Eliud Kipchoge and Bridget Kosgei set a new world record in Chicago and Vienna. The chairman of the event, Abraham Mutai, says the competition nurtures new Kenyan talent.
We've managed to see that the young ones are the ones participating more. We've had about 2,500 of the young ones doing the race. And for sure, I can tell you this country will now have talents and make sure that the supply for athletes to the national team will never go dry because of Dalatkar cross country.
Runner Daisy Chepkemei won this year's 10-kilometer race. She dreams of representing Kenya on the global stage. I started this year in Gabon as number two, says Chepkemei, and my sister was number one ranked, Nora Cheruto. Now I have built my body so that I can represent my country, she says. 22-year-old Robert Kiprop has similar dreams. He finished third in the men's junior 10-kilometer race. My leg has been giving me a bit of a problem, says Kiprop. I was supposed to go to Berlin to compete, but I could not go because of injury. Then I prepared for this Dalat race to try my luck, he says, and see how I'm recovering from my injury. Kenya's Rift Valley has produced most of the country's athletes and is filled with training camps. At Kericho County's Lomite training camp, 40 young athletes hope to one day become champions. Emily Chebet was among the first runners to join the camp 12 years ago at the age of 14. Since joining the camp, she has won many competitions. I went to compete in Ethiopia, where I finished fourth in the 5,000-meter race, says Chebet. Then I went to Mauritius, where I won a gold medal for the 3,000 meters, she says, and then to Colombia, where I won a silver medal for the 3,000 meters. Recently, I graduated to compete in the 21-kilometer race at Chebet. Her sister, Beatrice Chebet, joined the camp 5 years ago after winning this year's World Under 20 Championship. She's even more ambitious.
By now, I prepare for Africa cross country.
Now I'm preparing for Africa cross country for the Olympics, said Chebet. I will work with my coach for the training, the help and the advice I need, she says, adding, I think I will do well. The competition is getting stiffer as many athletes want to represent Kenya at the 2020 Olympics in Japan. At the 2016 Games, Kenyan athletes captured 13 medals, all but one of them for running. At local competitions like the Dalat's cross-country races, the winners get flowers and tea bags. It is a small but welcome beginning for many Kenyan athletes who hope to win greater rewards on the world stage. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Dalat, Kenya.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Nadia Taha, and our engineer, Justin Twaite, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Sports fans, this is the Voice of America's Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for the sunny side of sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute edition of the show at 17:30 UTC, right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, conflict in Cameroon between the government and the English-speaking regions has caused death and displacement of 500,000 people. We'll explore how a peaceful resolution can be achieved on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.